welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
This is Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast 100th episode. And my co-hosts today, And my co-hosts today are...
Hi, I'm Sharon Long.
And Stacey Mencher.
And so one of the things we do on this podcast is we have a list of notable alumni from Syosset. And at the top of the list is our guest from the 100th, for the 100th episode.
Syosset legend, Judd Apatow.
Welcome.
Yay. Thank you so much for doing this. This is fun.
Yes, thank you.
Super happy to
exciting.
Be here.
First of all, we have to ask, were you a library user? We're going to like...
I was going to be like, that's the biggest question
not.
Well, let me tell you, I'm older than all of you. So let me tell you about my young life. It was all about the Syosset Library. That's
what?
Where we spent our time before this crazy internet, before there was the easy access to the Google. You would go to the Syosset Library and take out all of your books. I was a big fan of the microfiche.
Microfiche is still here.
We still have it.
And I, you know, if I was interested as a kid in comedy and I wanted to learn about somebody like Lenny Bruce, I would go to the Syosset Public Library. I would find out all the articles that the New York Times wrote about Lenny Bruce. And then I would start working through the microfiche, and I used to have them printed up and I would bring them home. I remember going there and looking up articles about John Belushi and Jimi Hendrix, and that's how I found things out.
Awesome.
That's awesome. And now we have your books on our shelves.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah, it's all come full circle, but I really did spend a lot of time there, and I, you know, as a little kid, you know, we'd go there to take out all of our books, and then the school spent a lot of time there, and we would go there. But as a young person interested in comedy, that's where I did all my research, because I didn't have another way to find anything out.
So maybe we should be the Syosset Public Library and Judd Apatow Research Center.
I think so.
Comedy.com.
Yeah.
So yeah, as you might have seen, we've expanded probably since you were a kid. We now have several levels, and now we have a podcast.
All right. So I guess I'd like to hear a little bit more about your experiences growing up in Syosset, and where were the hangouts back then? Because certainly we have our diners. We have, you know, the trails with the dirt bikes, and all that stuff was big in the 80s. So I just wanted to hear a little bit about your time and what middle school you went to, and, you know, younger Judd and how he spent his time.
Well, I moved to Syosset from Queens in, I think, 1972. And I went to the Walt Whitman School. That was my elementary school. And then I went to Thompson Junior High.
Thompson.
Before going to Syosset High. My parents built a house in the Gates on Nome Drive.
Oh, the Gates.
In the Gates. And so, you know, life was very different back then, because you would just get on your bike and go. At a very early age, you were just unleashed on the world. The great thing about the Gates was it was its own little community. So it was big, or at least to a little kid, it felt enormous. And you would just wander around, and no one knew where you were. There were no cell phones. You would just leave and go, I'll be home around dinner. And then your family had no idea what you were doing. And then there was always this trail in the gate somewhere that you could take. And that took us to another community, you know, that was off of Plainview Drive, I think. And so we would just then disappear into their community. And, you know, as a parent now, I'm terrified to let my kids, you know, walk 8 feet away. I think we're also overly cautious. But back then, there was a world of kids. It was Lord of the Flies running around the gates. And we used to go to On Parade Diner. We were very excited as little kids in like sixth grade to go to On Parade Diner by ourselves at midnight. All our parents were divorced. By the end of junior high, everybody's parents were divorced. And what you would do is you would move into one of the condo communities. So I was living in Woodbury in the Gates. And then my parents got divorced and I moved to Hidden Ridge.
Oh, Hidden Ridge.
Yes. Okay.
I had friends. Yes. Yes.
And a lot of the Islanders lived in Hidden Ridge, like Bobby Nystrom and Billy Smith. Yeah. And they were winning the Stanley Cup every year. It was very exciting. And then my best friend, Ron Garner, He moved into Fairhaven.
Yep.
And so it was a world of kids with divorced parents who were busy working who weren't around. So we're all just like neglected latchkey kids, creating our own little worlds. And it was, you know, it was very fun. And I was thinking recently, I feel like kids are so stressed these days, and everyone's always talking about their anxiety and their depression, and it's a very challenging time to grow up. And I don't think we ever heard the word anxiety when we were kids or depression. We were all just, you know, dealing with what we had to deal with, supporting each other. It was a very, you know, freaks and geeks type of world. But I always wonder, was everybody really depressed and anxious, but we didn't have words for it, or no one paid any attention to us, or was it a fair amount less stressful than it is now?
I think there's a combination of both.
I was going to say combo.
I think it was always there and people generally didn't talk about it, but I think that the connection, like the fact that everybody's always connected, 24-hour news cycle, you know, like everything is very quick. I think that there was a little bit less anxiety because things moved, or they seemed to move a little slower. Like you'd hear about things, but it wouldn't be constant. And
right,
yeah,
I just remember like anxiety about Hurricane Gloria. That was the one news.
Oh, thing. Hurricane! Yeah,
yeah, that was anxiety producing. I was a little kid then too.
But so So like you mentioned freaks and geeks. We do have your high school yearbook here.
Yeah, Jessica has it.
So you had Jack DeMacy, who I had, and he was great. But you worked with him on the radio.
That's right. He taught film and video, and he was that teacher who was really smart and cool and talked about good movies, and he treated you like a young adult.
You called him Jack. You never called him Mr. DeMacy. He was Jack.
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
And
yeah,
he was in charge of the radio station. My friend Josh Rosenthal joined the radio station, and then I soon followed. And that was a really amazing place where you were allowed to enter the adult world. I remember I used to do the news down there, and I was allowed to interview this guy running for Congress. And I remember being really obnoxious and challenging him and how angry he was at me. But there were kids doing news and doing sports. And our friend Sean Griffin, who sadly passed away this year, he did a sketch show. And I was so blown away by how funny he was. And him and this friend of all of ours, Bob Goodman, did this sketch show. And that was also the early days of Howard Stern on the radio. And so radio was very exciting. My friend Josh used to go off and interview people. So he went and he would interview like REM in the beginning of alternative music. And then he said, you should interview comedians. And that's how I started interviewing comedians. I created a show, which I'm sure no one ever heard. Literally, maybe no one ever heard it. but I use it as an excuse to meet Jay Leno and Jerry Seinfeld and Sandra Bernhard and all of these people. And so I interviewed about 50 comedy people, and that's how I got a lot of my education about how to approach what I wanted to do. I interviewed Harold Ramis, who directed, you know, Groundhog Day.
And he's Egon, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And I interviewed a lot of the original writers from Saturday Night Live. And then I became the station manager for my senior year, which is a big deal. But I did a terrible job because I also got a girlfriend that year. And I completely neglected the radio station.
Aww.
Because I enjoyed being with my girlfriend more than running the radio station.
I mean, I don't think we can really fault you at this point, you know, high school, that's
yeah.
kind of how it is.
Yes.
So I think, like, when we think about Freaks and Geeks, and I know that you did that with Paul Feig, how much of Syosset High School is in Freaks and Geeks? Like, I know I've always wondered, Mr. Grosso, to me, I look at him and I'm like, well, that's Chuck Gleason.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, Paul wrote the pilot, and then, you know, then with the writing staff got involved, and we would, you know, talk about our high school. So it became a combination of multiple high schools. I always thought it was funny that when I was in high school, there was a smoking patio in the middle of Syosset High School. So there's this, you know.
There sure was.
There was like a, you know, the whole school was like a square shaped, and in the center of it was this patio, and it was free reign to go out there and smoke. And so when you hung out in the lobby of the school, there's giant windows and like 100 kids smoking outside. Nobody ever asked how old they were. No one ever questioned it. There wasn't one moment where someone said, like, that person's 14. Like, it was just such a completely different time. And it was also a time of a lot of interest in the Grateful Dead. There were a lot of kids who would travel around the country following the Grateful Dead. You know, kids all wore denim jackets, and they would have people paint these, like, beautiful paintings of their favorite bands or the logos of their favorite bands. That was a very, like, popular thing to do, which I never could afford or understand how to get done. And so there were, like, what we used to call, like, the burnouts. Mm-hmm. And I was probably a lot like Sam Weir from the show. I was, like, not a nerd completely, not an edgy kid completely. I was, like, just in that space of kids who just liked Monty Python and Steve Martin. And but I also don't remember, you know, the cliques being cruel. You know, the kids who were popular or the football players or the cheerleaders, you know, it wasn't a brutal atmosphere. You might wish you could hang out with certain groups, but it wasn't that they were being unkind. You know, definitely in those days, you know, there was a much more blue-collar element to the school. You know, it almost was like there was tracks. There was the other side of the tracks. And there was these, like, fancy houses being built in Woodbury. A lot of blue-collar people in Syosset. But for the most part, it was pretty mellow. When I look at what it's like now around the world in different high schools, I think, I don't know, we were all having a lot of fun for the most part. It wasn't too intense.
I feel yeah. even it continued, like, into the 90s, like, it was okay, you know. I don't think you didn't have online bullying. That was, like, you know, before yeah. all that. So it was yeah. a simpler time in many ways, yeah.
Well, no one knew where you were. I mean, you'd have a couple of friends, but you never felt left out because you didn't know what anyone was doing because there was no phones and no internet. Right. And you never saw a picture of anyone having fun and you weren't invited. And I keep saying one of the problems with kids today is I think they have too many friends. They know too many people. Mm-hmm. And if you hang out with, like, 3 people, it's different than if you hang out with 20 people, because then mm-hmm. you just, based on the math, you're going to have more drama because you just, there's too much going on, too many problems. You know, I hung out with, you know, Ron Garner and Kevin Weltman and Josh Rosenthal. I had, like, 3 friends. That was kind of it. And it was very maintainable, all of it.
In general, I was just curious about some teachers that you might have any memories of. Ms. Esslinger, she still works at Syosset High School, and she comes into the library, and she always has great stories. So I was curious if you did any drama or anything with her when you were at the high school.
You know, I was supposed to be in West Side Story, and my grandfather died, and I had to go to California to deal with that. I don't remember if I was like Officer Krupke or something, but it was the first time I auditioned to be in a school play. And I don't know, I was probably scared to try to act. I wasn't part of the theater kids group. I don't even know if I ever went to the school plays, but I finally got up the courage to try to be in one and got a small part. And then my grandfather died very early, and I just dropped out instantly. I don't even know if I went to a rehearsal, just like, I have to go deal with this. And that was it for acting for me. That could have ended my whole dream of acting, because I never did it. I did stand up around Long Island at Eastside Comedy Club and Governor's Comedy Club and Chuckles during my senior year, but I never got into acting again. The teacher who I loved, there was a few teachers that had a big impact on me. One was a teacher named Mr. Samick, who was a history teacher, and he was this big, like, pop-eyed, armed, strong, thick, you know, tough guy who was really funny and a great storyteller and ran a great class and made it all interesting. And we just loved this guy. I looked him up on the internet, just trying to figure out where he was. You know, every once in a while you just try to tell somebody that they were, had a big impact on your life. And all I could find was records of him fishing. So at least I assume he had a lot of fun fishing. And then there was a teacher named Mrs. Farber. Mm-hmm. And Mrs. Farber was an English teacher. And she, you know, had like whitish blonde kind of, you know, very prim and proper hair and wore sweaters and was very kind of pale. And I remember that she asked us to write our autobiography for an assignment in 11th grade. And my parents were getting divorced and it was all kind of ugly. So instead I just made it all up, the whole thing. And I talked about how I was actually a CIA agent and I was undercover at the school and I was having an affair with all of these teachers, and I just made up this crazy story, and she gave me an A. And it was the kind of thing that you could have gotten an F for. And she just said to me, "You know, you're funny. You could be like Woody Allen. You're really funny." And she meant it, and I knew that she meant it, and it had a gigantic effect on me, because it wasn't the type of person that I necessarily thought would get me. And her encouragement really made me believe that it was possible that I could professionally be funny. But it was also a big deal not to be shamed for my creativity. And a lot of times you'd have teachers, they just didn't get you and they want you to just follow the rules and do the assignment the way it was intended. And she understood instinctually, like, oh, this is a kid who has a big imagination and I'm going to encourage it. And that actually really was important to me. I remember I had a physics teacher named Richard Less.
Yes. He was great. I had him too. Yeah.
And he was a very nice man. He's like a really good teacher.
Yes.
I wanted to get into a good college. I wasn't that smart. So I didn't really take a lot of like AP classes. But my friends and I, we said, we're going to try to take AP physics to help. And we were completely, you know, not qualified, didn't have the brains for it. And we would cheat like crazy. Like back then, you really could cheat. And we were unabashed cheaters. We would get the test from friends. We would steal the test. We had so many scams going on. And then at some point there was a test and we couldn't find a way to cheat on it. And we literally knew nothing. Like we knew absolutely nothing. And I had to withdraw from the class, like withdraw passing. So I didn't get like an F in the class. But I always remember that his name was Richard Less. So people would call him Dick Less. And yep. on the board, it said pickle. And it was always like, oh, because someone tried to write Dick Less on the board. He caught them before they got to the S, and he turned the D into a P, so it said pickle.
That's really
a really good teacher, yeah. I have to say, though, by, like, the late 90s era, he let us have a lot of, like, open book tests, so I think he was just, like, you know.
Over it.
You wore him down, I think.
He would get tired. I mean, it's so funny, you know, you have certain teachers that have such a big impact on you, because I wasn't a great student, and there was a system there, and I don't know if they still do it, but it was the track system.
Track one. Yeah, they stopped that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the worst idea ever. Yeah. It's the worst idea ever. So smart kids were track one. Normal kids were track two. And track three were the kids who were struggling in some way. Yeah. And so very early on, like, they would test you in sixth grade and decide what track you were in. But the bad part was there was no way to jump tracks. No one ever went from track two to track one. So they would basically define you as not that sharp from the get-go. And then you would see the kids who were in track one, and they were like, you know, their clothes looked cleaner. They just seemed like they were together, and they liked school, and they got good grades. And I so wanted to be in that group and felt so bad that I was defined as not worthy of being in that group. And it was terrible. And I think that, like, it probably had a big effect on, like, my self-esteem. Like, wait, so I'm not that sharp? But I think it also made me a little bitter in a way that made me work hard. Like, all right, well, I'm going to find another way to succeed in life if you're not going to let me, you know, have what I would assume would be the better teachers. Like, I bet the better teachers are working with the smarter kids. But it was a really ridiculous system. And then it made us rebel. And we did always try to cheat. And I know kids cheat, but back then when you would get caught cheating, you wouldn't get, like, expelled from school. It was pretty light, the punishment for cheating. So it was a never ending quest to, you know, write all the answers on your arm underneath your cast or whatever scam you had going.
That's great.
Oh, wow.
So I heard, so back then it was like the more like an open campus situation where people could just kind of, like, even in middle school, my cousin was telling me actually that, like, people would just kind of walk off the Thompson grounds at lunchtime and sneak over to, like, McDonald's. And he said something like there was a principal that used to try to, like, catch people doing that. And
Yeah,
it seems like a very different time now. Everything's so locked down. It's just, it's not as much fun. So.
Well, I don't think you were supposed to leave in middle school, but we just did.
Yeah.
and you, it was pretty easy to not get caught. And if you got caught, people didn't really care that much. But Thompson Junior High School was right down the street from McDonald's.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you'd always try to run to McDonald's at lunch or if you could escape. And what I remember is that I probably had McDonald's always, 4 to 5 times a week my entire childhood. There was so much McDonald's. My parents would pick up McDonald's like we had a fancy meal multiple times a week with no shame and no discussion ever that it might be unhealthy. There was never a discussion that, like, this was a less healthy meal than another meal. And at the high school, because a lot of people drove, people were just wandering around. I mean, I don't remember there being, like, a lot of passes and stuff. You know, there was some system, I don't even quite remember, of, like, passes. But, yeah, kids were just, you know, just wandering around for the most part. I also remember that my parents never, ever set foot in my high school. There was no parent-teacher meeting they attended. There was no relationship with my guidance counselor. they were not a part of my education at all, probably starting, you know, at the end of elementary school. I got in trouble a lot in elementary school. I was just an obnoxious kid. I still have a letter from one of the principals saying to my mom that Judd refuses to be disciplined. that I wouldn't listen even when you disciplined me.
That sounds like my kids.
There's hope for boys.
Yeah, I mean,
oh my God.
I loved fighting with teachers in like fifth grade and sixth grade. I just thought it was the funniest thing to make them mad, and the worse, you know, the better. I remember gluing all the chairs in art class in fifth grade to the tables when no one was in the room. I definitely
was it with that rubber cement stuff that smelled so bad that probably killed all of our brain cells.
That's how you'd roll it into boogers.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
But I look back at all of it as being like really like fun for the most part. There was another teacher who was great in eighth grade in Thompson. His name was Mr. Board.
Mr. Board. Yeah. Did he go to the high school at one point? Because
yes.
I went to Southwoods, which is, I know that you went to Thompson when you talk about going to McDonald's. I went to Southwoods. You wanted to sneak out for lunch in Southwoods. You were SOL. There was no place to walk.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mr. Board ended up in the high school.
Well, it's what someone told me years ago, and I don't know the accuracy of this, so I apologize to Mr. Board. But I think what happened was he got in trouble for something. I forgot what it was. Not like a more of like an administrative thing. And they sent him down for only 1 year to teach in the middle school. And then he went back to the high school. I think his time in the middle school was brief as some punishment for something. Oh, wow. He was a young, really smart, really funny, fantastic English teacher. And I remember it was the year E.T. came out, and he came in with the button that said, "I saw E.T., which was a big deal because it was hard to get in. It was so popular. And he would play the Beatles music, and he would curse a little bit. Every once in a while, he'd say shit. You're like, he's the coolest guy ever.
Oh.
And I wrote as an assignment a book report about a Lenny Bruce book. There was a book called Ladies and Gentlemen, Lenny Bruce, that Albert Goldman wrote. And I photocopied it. And from the library, I photocopied all the articles about Lenny Bruce's life and his obituary. And I made a book report of it with all these photos. And I handed it in. And he said that he lost it. And I decided in my mind that he liked it so much that he stole it. I was like, he knew that was good. He just wanted my beautiful book report. But he was another teacher that had a big impact on me because he was funny and he got it. And you'd be excited to go to his class.
So that kind of brings it around to just in general, Syosset. Syosset has obviously had an impact on so many people, and there are so many people who've gone from Syosset to show business to all sorts of crazy things, production. What do you think it was just about the community, the town, the school? Or do you think that just the way the opportunities that they gave?
I didn't go to Syosset. I lived the town over in Jericho. So here you guys reminisce. I'm like, we didn't have that. We didn't have that either. Like, we didn't have McDonald's nearby to sneak out. Because the middle school and high school are combined at Jericho.
Jericho is worse than Southwoods. There is absolutely nothing around you guys.
No,
well, I think that, you know, I was watching that movie on HBO with Hugh Jackman, Education.
Oh, yeah, we're name dropping that.
Yeah, and they just talk about the competition to be like the best high school in New York or America. And there was always this belief that, Syosset is one of the best high schools in the country. And I didn't know anything back then about other high schools, how they worked. I didn't even understand what a private school was. Like, if you asked me as a kid, I couldn't even tell you what happened in a private school. It seemed like a very mysterious thing I'd never seen. Mm-hmm. I'd never seen it on TV. I didn't even know what happened there. But I definitely think that there was an interest in the arts that has probably gone away in a lot of schools, where we had a radio and TV department and we had a radio station and there was musical theater and there was band and chorus and art. And that was an important part of school in addition to sports. And for the most part, I mean, you always, you know, semi-dislike your teachers as a kid. I kind of came from that stance of like teachers as the enemy. It took me years to bond with teachers. You know, I was probably like just frustrated. I was young. I shouldn't have been in my grade. I should have been a year left back a year. I was born in December, so I always felt
so you're like right by the cutoff then.
Yeah, and I always felt like younger and stupider than everybody. And the truth is, I was too young to be with everybody, and that probably is why I was so rebellious and had some struggles. And also, school was very based on sports, and they would pick sides in gym class, and it was very brutal. You'd get picked last every day, and then at lunch you'd play sports, and you'd get picked last again, and that defined you as kind of a runt, in a way that I think like messed with you socially. But overall, I think the school experience is pretty mellow and supportive, and you know, I know a lot of people in the arts went there, like Natalie Portman and Adam. Pascal and Idina Menzel and
Adam Pascal, we've had on the podcast. Yes,
yeah, he's great. Yeah, I saw him on Broadway in Rent, and John Lovett, who
we had him too,
who's fantastic and a friend of mine. And John and I wrote jokes for Obama for the correspondence dinner together. We had our little Syosset reunion of joke writing. I just did his podcast a few weeks ago. So I think they must have been teaching us well. I think that it was probably just back then a very good school. But for me, the best part was this radio station where we were allowed to act like adults. I used to call up comedians and pretend I was an adult to go get an interview. I never told them I was in high school. And we were all operating like that. And so definitely what Jack DeMacy was doing and Roy, who also
Roy and Jack.
Or Dipple. They treated us like we could accomplish things. They didn't talk to us like we were kids who were limited. You know, they gave us what we needed. And whenever you said you wanted to do something, like if I said, I want to start a radio show where I interview famous comedians, he'd be like, go do it. Go for it. You know, and Jack became a lifelong friend of all of us. You know, we still stay in touch with Jack, and he's come and visited my sets when I'm shooting movies. And I think, you know, of everybody, he had the biggest impact on us.
That's awesome.
We want to thank you so much for taking the time to do this. We know King of Staten Island just dropped on, I guess not the big screen because nobody's on the big screen now.
Yes. Video on demand.
As we're recording this, it's during the pandemic crazy times.
Yeah. So, once again, we thank you so, so much for taking the time to do this, for reminiscing with us. Do you ever
reminisce about Syosset?
Do you ever come back here?
Sometimes, I go to the city and, you know, we shot the movie in Staten Island and we were shooting the TV show Crashing and Girls in New York. So every once in a while I stop by. I don't have any friends who are still there now, but I definitely like peek in. My parents owned a restaurant there when I was a kid called Raisin's Restaurant in the Woodbury Commons. And I used to put together the New York Times when I was in elementary school at the cottage pharmacy.
Still there. So
I always, check in and see how my house looks. They did a piece on me for 60 minutes and we went to On Parade Diner and then we went and looked at my old house and we knocked on the door, but no one was there that day. But another day I knocked on the door, and the people answered and let me take a short peek.
Oh, that's really cool.
Excellent.
The Enfrey Diner is still doing well, and they offer outdoor right now. So
I know, because my parents go there all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to have the double cheeseburger deluxe.
Still delicious.
Yeah.
Good, yeah.
Well, once again, thank you so, so much for coming and doing this on our 100th episode through the magic of Zoom. Yay. So we're going to wrap it up.
Close this chapter of Turn the Page, Jessica.
This has been Jessica with
Sharon
and Stacy
and our special guest,
Judd Apatow.
And thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care, guys.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.